What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show presented by DraftKings. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, masking and socially distancing when and where necessary. And as always, we got a big show for you. We'll look back at last night's Thursday night football contest. Brent Rippon making a little bit of an impression, at least in the first half, second half, maybe a little bit of a different story. We'll have our big questions for the week, plus some of our best values for daily fantasy players as we head toward the bulk of week four. We'll be joined, as we always are on Fridays, by our pal Michael F. Florio. But before we dive into any of that, talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, it's been a while since we've had an air conditioning update, and I understand there are there are HVAC issues over at your apartment again today.
Yeah, I mean, it was fixed. They actually did come in here, fix it, fix the leaking issues. It was working, feels great, super cold in here. And then for those living in LA, we know we have it's a mini heat wave. So it was pretty hot yesterday. And then my complex just took it upon themselves to just like cut the AC power for everyone. So I was like sitting here yesterday in the evening, prepping for the show. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wow, it's getting kind of hot in here. And the temperature kept going up and up and inching towards 80. And I was like, here we go again. But luckily, as of this morning, it is back on, and I am now recording with you in comfortable conditions.
That is all we can ask for, because it is weird. I mean, this is sort of life in Los Angeles that it's October 2nd, and we're still dealing with temperatures in the 80s or so in a lot of places here. But such is life. So we hope you continue to have cool comfort.
Yeah. and especially too, it's a good point. LA in October, a lot of people want to visit during the summer. It's a quick note for people who want to visit LA. Come like end of September, October, November, the best months to visit.
Yeah. Do not come in June. That is the first thing, right? Especially if you're going to go to the beach. There's June gloom. It's foggy. It's overcast. If you go to the beach in Los Angeles in June, you are pretty guaranteed to be disappointed. Mm-hmm. So Eddie is right. Come here, late, mid to late September, if you can get a weekend away. That's the best time to come. All right, we will bring in, as we always do on Fridays, our friend Michael F. Florio. And Florio, I know this is a fantasy football show, but we got baseball playoffs going on. And at least the first round in a lot of different places has been very interesting and very exciting. I'm sorry that your Metropolitans aren't involved, but at least there seems to be excited and interested about with the baseball playoffs.
Yeah, more than half the teams made it, and the Mets still couldn't. That's no one's fault but their own. Your Dodgers have looked great. Clayton Kershaw proven everyone that he can pitch in the playoffs. And I stayed up the other night to watch, unfortunately, the Yankees advance to the next round.
Yeah, but they got a tough matchup with the Rays. The Rays can certainly take them down. The one thing I think is really interesting is that the Dodgers will have to go to Texas to play their next round, while a team from Texas, the Houston Astros, will come to Dodger Stadium to play the A's in the next round. I don't understand how that happened, but that is what it is. I don't make the schedule. I just watch the games. That's all I can say about that. Let's get into this first. We'll start with a little bit of news. We have been following the story all week long of the Tennessee Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers game. We learned earlier in the week that game has been postponed and moved to a later date. We now know what that date is going to be. So the Steelers and Titans will now play each other in week 7. The game between the Steelers and Ravens that was scheduled for week 7 will be moved now to week 8, which means that Baltimore's bye, which had been in week 8, will be in week 7 instead. I know this sounds confusing, and there are plenty of places on the internet that has it in written form, so you can go check it out there and sort of keep up with it. But that is the long and short of it. As for what happens in week 4, I know I've been getting a lot of questions about it, so I'll run down sort of the basics of it. Everybody involved in that Steelers-Titans game will now have a week 4 bye since the game has been rescheduled. This is the new bye weeks for Pittsburgh and Tennessee. They will not have another bye later on in the year. No players will get any special designation. I know a lot of folks have asked whether or not your Titans or Steelers players will be eligible for the COVID list that has been placed on a lot of fantasy rosters. That will not be the case, because unless those players are specifically put on the NFL's COVID reserve list, they're not eligible for your fantasy COVID reserve spot. So if you have a player with a special designation, if they are on injured reserve or what have you, they will retain those, but no Steelers or Titans, unless previously designated, will be put on the COVID list. So there it is. I know that was a whole lot of information to sort of digest, but again, you can go to NFL.com. You can check Twitter. There's plenty of information out there to sort of help you break this down. And so we'll sort of see how this goes on. This is the beginning of what we expect it to be a difficult and confusing season. We hope that this is the last time, but I think we're sort of bracing for the fact that this may not be the last time we have one of these situations before the end of the 2020 season. All right, other news. Chris Godwin, Leonard Fournette have been ruled out of the Bucs Week 4 contest against the Los Angeles Chargers. Godwin is dealing with a hamstring injury. Fournette has an ankle injury. And Florio, I mean, these are guys that are going to be a big part of the Buccaneers offense. I mean, you take this out, this changes a lot of things. Who are you expecting to sort of pick up the slack this week against the Chargers?
I think Mike Evans is the obvious one. Hopefully he can be used for more than just being like a goal line wide receiver specialist, which is kind of how he's been used a lot in these first 3 weeks. I think he'll see a big boost in targets. I think seeing Gronk get, you know, involved in week three, that hopefully leads to more things to come for those who drafted him. And then I think Scotty Miller and Justin Watson will also, they're now in the flex range for me in the fantasy football rankings this week.
Now, I saw some chatter just before we started recording that maybe Keyshawn Vaughn is active, that maybe he starts to get on the field and get some touches. That's a name that we haven't talked about since probably the end of August, maybe right around Labor Day. Any interest in plugging him in deeper leagues, or is this just sort of a hands-off situation?
Yeah, to me, that's a lot of speculation. It's someone that, like, the fantasy community as a whole, I think, wants to see on the field. So we're trying to, like, will it to existence. But I think he's more of a player that maybe this week you could take a speculative add on, have on your bench. There's no way I would feel comfortable enough getting him into my starting lineup, especially since the Chargers are so tough against the run. But it also comes down to how much time is Fournette going to miss, because we know that once he's back, it's going to be to the same role for Keyshawn Vaughn. He's not going to play over Jones and Fournette, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think that at least in the short term, maybe this does mean a bit of a heavier workload for Ronald Jones. The hard part with the Buccaneers running backs is that it's going to be sort of a moving target all year. You know, it was a couple weeks ago, Jones had the fumble, and then we ended up seeing a lot of Fournette. Last week, it was less Fournette, more Jones. So I get the feeling it's going to be hard to sort of pin down how each guy is going to perform or what their workload is going to be on a week-to-week basis. But I do think that with no Leonard Fournette, it means more touches for Ronald Jones. But as you pointed out, that Charger run defense is not something to be taken lightly. So it may not still be the best matchup. But understanding that, you know, especially in seasonal leagues, depending on what your options are, you may be in a situation where you put Jones in as an RB2, as a flex, just understand that the returns may not be great. And as for the pass situation, I agree. Mike Evans hopefully sees more downfield targets, and he is not the, you know, receiving equivalent of Jerome Bettis getting his two catches for 2 yards and two touchdowns. No, it's funny because the fantasy numbers are fine, right? And you're talking about getting, what, 14 or so points out of him. But I always like to say they don't ask how, they ask how many. But in this situation, I do feel like the how is sort of important. I mean, he is going to get more than two targets or two catches this week, right, with no Chris Godwin?
I would imagine so. Like, when you made the Jerome Bettis comp, what I had in my head was, like, the Spider-Man gif of, like, him, of Evans and Jordan Howard, like, pointing at one another. Because, like, that's kind of – he's, like, the Jordan Howard of wide receivers right now. And I don't get it, because – he's also one of the best downfield threats in the NFL. So hopefully that it takes Chris Godwin getting hurt for them to realize, hey, we could throw the ball downfield to Mike Evans. I'm expecting more out of him this week, especially if the Bucs struggle to establish the run, because the Chargers' defense against the run has been really, really good this year.
I completely agree. All right, let's move to the New Orleans Saints, staying in the same division. Alvin Kamara telling people that the Saints will get back on track and everybody will shut up. There has certainly been a lot of talk about this Saints offense, certainly not about Kamara. I mean, he's been great through the first 3 weeks of the season, especially after last year not having a lot of touchdowns, but he has certainly made up for that. Now, our own Cynthia Freeland, who is an analytics whiz, she wrote this week on NFL.com that rumors of Breeze's demise have been greatly exaggerated, basically making the point Yeah, Drew Brees has never been a big-time air yards guy, at least not over the last several years. That's the way the Saints offense has operated. It has been kind of short air yards throws to Michael Thomas. He picks up yards after the catch. Alvin Kamara does what you're seeing on the screen there, taking a short pass and going down the field, making big plays out of it. So maybe we shouldn't freak out. I mean, is that the case, Florio? Have we overreacted to the Saints struggling early this season?
I think a little bit, because it's hard to judge this offense when you take away Michael Thomas, right? Like, would we be judging Kyler Murray on how he's playing without DeAndre Hopkins? Or, you know, like Michael Thomas is, I know people on Twitter sometimes like to say he's overrated. He is still one of the absolute best wide receivers in football. So you take him out of that offense, I think it's understandable that they will struggle. My only cause for concern is everything. Like Drew Brees is not a big air yards quarterback, but normally he's sitting around 7 air yards per target. This year it's down to 5. So that is a noticeable decrease. And my one argument for Kamara is maybe don't root for it to get back on track, because right now your role in this offense is infinite targets, and that's awesome for fantasy.
It's absolutely awesome for fantasy. So yeah, maybe we want it to sort of stay the way it is. Look, Michael Thomas has a good chance to come back and play this week. We'll see if that actually happens, in which case the passing game pretty much funnels through he and Alvin Kamara for the most part. I think you could kind of fade Emmanuel Sanders. You can fade Tre'Quan Smith. We'll see how that works. The other thing about Drew Brees that worries me is he's thrown a couple of interceptions that are just sort of head scratchers that we have not seen from him in the past. I mean, I'm thinking about the one against the Raiders on Monday night where it was like he just didn't see a linebacker in the middle of the field and threw the ball right to him. Maybe it was just a hiccup. Maybe it was just kind of a bad play. But you combine that with the lower air yards total, and it does make me a little bit concerned about Drew Brees. I don't have him anywhere, but I just hope that if this is a decline, that it doesn't impact what we're seeing from some of those other pass catchers. If you have a Michael Thomas, if you have a Jared Cook, if you have Alvin Kamara, I think you're going to be fine. I think they're going to get him the football, and he's going to score touchdowns, and he'll be just fine. It's some of those other guys downfield a little further that maybe you're worried about. All right.
Go ahead. I was saying, maybe it's unfair, but I always, when a quarterback gets this old, I always think of the fall off that Peyton Manning had, and that it just kind of happened overnight. So if I have Drew Brees right now, I'm like you, Marcus. I didn't really draft him, but if I have him, I'm a little bit concerned at the very least.
Quarterbacks generally don't go through a gradual decline. They tend to just fall off a cliff. And especially, I think, when you get guys who are certainly later in their careers, or I don't want to say old because Drew Brees is younger than me, but guys who are of an advanced football age, it just tends to sort of fall apart for them all in a hurry. So
Jameis,
we'll see.
Jameis.
I want Jameis because it'll be fun. It will just be fun.
It would be so much fun.
So much fun. Odell Beckham Jr. has said a couple times this year that maybe his role and his production won't be what people expect of it or what it was when he was with the New York Giants. He came out earlier this week and said the goal in the Browns offense is to make Nick Chubb the number one rusher in the NFL. That's great if you have Nick Chubb. It actually works pretty well if you've got Kareem Hunt, because the Browns seem to be running the football pretty effectively. But does this mean, Florio, that it is maybe time to sort of fade Beckham a little bit in this offense?
It's painful to say. Like, I don't think you can value Odell as a wide receiver one anymore in this offense. I just don't see it. I think most weeks for me, he's going to come in that wide receiver two range, because I do think his upside is, especially in a week like this week against Dallas, where it's a good matchup on paper for the wide receivers one. And then two, I expect them to have to put up more points than they've had to the last 2 weeks, which I'm hopeful means that Baker will throw the ball more than 23 times, because the last 2 weeks he's thrown it exactly 23 times in each game. So I think a week like this week, where you could expect maybe a little bit more volume, is a good week to play him. But I think on a week-to-week basis, yeah, you're not going to get a wide receiver one, and you may not get a wide receiver two some weeks if the Browns can play like they have the last 2 weeks and just rely on both of those running backs.
I had a tough time sort of pegging Odell during fantasy draft season. I didn't really know where to slot him, because on the one hand, you know how talented he is and what his potential ceiling could be. But I also wasn't sure of how the offense was going to utilize him, knowing Kevin Stefanski was there, knowing that Stefanski generally likes to run the football and that they have a couple of really good running backs. So I just never quite figured out where to peg OBJ. For that reason, I don't think I drafted him in a whole lot of spots. So I do think now that we're 3 weeks in, we have a better idea of what to expect. And maybe it is more in the wide receiver two range, just because, again, not because of any ability decline, but just because of the scheme and the fit there that, you know, Odell is not going to be the guy that we used to see when he was, doing big things with the Giants and with Eli Manning and that offense there in New York. So always great to readjust, always great to sort of rethink some things. And I think we're now rethinking what we're thinking about OBJ. By the way, if you guys want more great news and notes, be sure to check us out on NFL Fantasy Game Day on Sunday mornings. We get that show going at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. It's myself, Florio, Adam Rank, Kimmy Checks, all going through the starts and sits, the guys who are in, the guys who are out, and maybe some sleepers for the week as well. You can find that in the NFL Fantasy app on NFL.com and on YouTube as well at the YouTube.com/NFL Fantasy Football. Plus, Florio is there answering your questions live during the show. So if you have any last-minute injury questions, start sit questions, hit him up, and he will get to as many of them as he possibly can before we pull him away and put his pretty face on television or the internet or whatever it is. Speaking of television, we did have Thursday Night Football on our television sets last night, and it was a game that on paper people sort of poo-pooed. I mean, it didn't look great. It was Broncos at Jets. Neither team had a win to that point in the season, but at least the fourth quarter of it turned out to be sort of fun. It was a high-scoring game. The Broncos ended up getting the win, 37-28. So we'll go through some of the top scores on the Denver side of the ledger. Melvin Gordon had a big night, 107 rushing yards and a pair of touchdowns. My trash guillotine league team, which is just barely missing the cut each and every week. Thanks you for that infusion. You might have helped me stave off elimination for another week, so that was cool. Tim Patrick had a big night as well. Actually, let's look at Melvin Gordon, right? Because Melvin Gordon had the big game. Let's just talk about this, Florio. What do we make of Gordon's night? Can he keep this going, or is this just a function of no Philip Lindsay being there?
I think last night was kind of the perfect storm for Gordon. They were down to their third string quarterback. They did not have Philip Lindsay. The Jets defense is missing a ton of pieces. It's a good matchup on paper for him. I don't expect this every week out of Melvin Gordon. I think we saw kind of the last 2 weeks, the peaks and valleys of Gordon, and I kind of expect him to be that kind of player all year this year. Like, have some big games like this and then have some other games where you're just left wanting more production out of him.
Yeah, I started him because I felt like this was an opportunity, as you mentioned. This was the perfect storm because they were going to have to lean on him. And I feel like he touched the ball on the first like five or six plays for the Broncos. It was like, a couple of handoffs, a couple of short passes, and they really tried to work him in. I think they were just trying to get their quarterback comfortable before they started to let him go downfield. Speaking of that, Tim Patrick ended up having a huge day for the Broncos. Six catches, 113 yards, and a touchdown. If you started him somewhere, and I'm sure that number is very, very small of people who started Tim Patrick this week, congratulations to you because you got about 23 fantasy points out of it. But what we saw out of Brett Rypien was a guy who was certainly willing to be aggressive. He threw the ball downfield. He threw it into tight windows. I mean, the touchdown that he threw to Tim Patrick was an absolute dart, like right through traffic, got it right into his hands. He threw a couple of nice balls that he dropped in the bucket. So for our selfish fantasy purposes, I mean, I don't think anybody's starting Brett Rypien, but does he make us feel better about the Broncos pass catchers from a fantasy perspective?
I think so. Like, anytime you have a quarterback who's willing to air it out and give his receivers, like that Jerry Jeudy catch right there, like it's not a perfect throw by any stretch, but he's giving Jerry Jeudy an opportunity there to make a play, and Jeudy comes down with the ball and ends up scoring a touchdown. And to me, my favorite sequence from him last night happened, I believe it was in the fourth quarter. He threw a pretty nice deep ball to Deshaun Hamilton. Hamilton just didn't come down with it. I thought if he tried to lay out more, he could have. And then the very next play, he goes deep to Tim Patrick again for a 30-something yard completion. So he clearly showed that he is not afraid to throw the ball downfield. And to me, I love that for fantasy because then you don't have to rely on your guy catching, six, seven balls and racking up yards, because two long catches could be a really nice fantasy day.
He was very aggressive. You got to love to see that. It was weird. They put in Jeff Driskel for like a couple of running plays. I think he like scrambled on one and like took a wicked shot too. And I'm like, that didn't seem particularly prudent, but you know, who am I? I just write about fake football for a living. By the way, Brandon McManus had a pretty good game as well. It was an interesting kicker night because McManus had 17 points. Sam Ficken for the Jets had 18 points. I know there's the whole chorus of banned kickers out there, but hey, if you decided to go with kickers in your DraftKings lineup this week, then you felt pretty good about it because those guys had pretty good games. Let's flip it over to the Jets side while we're sitting here talking about Sam Ficken. And Sam Darnold, he was the high scorer for the Jets. I don't know what to make of the game, right? He had 230 passing yards, did not throw a touchdown, but he had 84 rushing yards and a pretty spectacular 47-yard touchdown run to start the game. I don't know what to say. I mean, Jamison Crowder ended up with a good night, 7 for 104. I mean, we're not starting Sam Darnold, right? I mean, we're agreed on that, right? Sam Darnold is not a fantasy relevant quarterback right now.
I don't think so. Not as long as Adam Gase is calling his plays. Although, Marcus, I did not know that Sam Darnold, like, I know he can run. I did not know he had wheels like that. And I wish that they were just like, hey, start running it more, because then I think he maybe could become fantasy relevant. But right now, no.
I can't buy it either. And look, I make no bones about my love for USC Trojans on this show. I want good things for him. But you're right. As long as Adam Gase is still running that offense, it's hard to believe that anything will let Sam Darnold prosper in any sort of real way. But Jamison Crowder.
A wheel route
to Frank Gore. Oh. Oh, man. I can't believe that.
On third down, too.
I don't understand, and I know this isn't part of it. We're kind of getting off track here, but I don't understand, and I love Frank Gore, right? I mean, he is literally going to live forever. But you've got a young guy back there in LaMichael Perine. You're not going anywhere. I mean, you have looked awful. At what point do you just put Perine back there and see what he can do? Just let him do his thing. I don't understand it. I can't. I have no words for it. Let's move on to Jamison Crowder. 7 catches for 104 yards. It does seem like Darnold tends to get tunnel vision for certain guys. Last week, that guy was Braxton Berrios because Crowder wasn't available. This week, Jamison Crowder was back to doing his thing. Are there any skill position players on this offense that we can trust not named Jamison Crowder, or is this it?
Right now, I think it is just Jamison Crowder. Unless Crowder misses time, then I actually do think it is Berrios, because both of those guys are slot receivers, and Sam Darnold this year is throwing to the slot more than basically any quarterback. Like, he throws 40% of his throws about that go to the slot, and we've seen it each game, right? Like, week one, it was Jamison Crowder having the big game, then last week it was Berrios, and then this week it's back to Crowder. So I think whoever is the Jets' slot receiver is until Le'Veon Bell returns, which he may return next week, then it's Bell and Crowder, and that's about it.
That is about it. I won't say we were fully never Jets, but we're, you know, mostly never Jets when it comes to fantasy on this show. But if you did play them in DraftKings, there were a couple of options out there that got you some big points on Thursday night. Speaking of which, today's show is sponsored by DraftKings, a leader in one-day fantasy sports. DraftKings has millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs this week, so download the DraftKings app now. Use code TEAM during sign-up and start feeling the sweat like never before. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, we are going headlong into the meat of week 4 coming up this Sunday, and there are plenty of questions to answer, or at least try to answer, as we get to the fourth Sunday of the 2020 NFL season. So let's just dive into them. First off, let's look at this Philadelphia offense. One of the big stories around this offense this week has been they just don't have any wide receivers. I mean, there have been multiple practices this week in which Greg Ward is not only the number one receiver, he is the receiver. He has been the guy working at that position in the offense. Dallas Goedert is hurt. There's just so many pieces missing. I know it, you know, look, that means maybe they lean on Zach Ertz, maybe they lean on Miles Sanders, but let's talk about Miles Sanders. I mean, if the Eagles have to be so one-dimensional, can we trust Miles Sanders against this 49ers offense, knowing the Eagles just can't throw the football?
I still would right now. I know the 49ers defense on paper looks super tough against running backs. I do think it is worth pointing out that they played the Jets without Le'Veon Bell and the Giants without Saquon Barkley. So that is going to impact those numbers. And I'm not taking anything away from the Niners defense. We know how good they can be. But Miles Sanders is finally seeing big time touches each week, and they're getting him more involved in the passing game still. So I think you can trust him. Like, I still have him as an RB1 right now because someone has to be effective, right? Get the touches in Philly. And I don't think it's going to happen, but we are hearing some whispers of Jalen Hurts, and he rushed for 1,300 yards and 20 touchdowns in college last year. So just a backfield with him and Sanders being a running threat out of that, that has me excited too, if we ever get to see that.
There have always been those whispers since he was drafted of the Eagles sort of remaking Jalen Hurts in Taysom Hill's image. Maybe this is the start of that because they need some help from somewhere. The word I've been hearing out of Philadelphia has just been that they want to get Miles Sanders touches, that if everything goes the way they want it to, that Sanders could be one of the NFL leaders in touches. I don't know that it's quite worked out that way the first 3 weeks. I mean, Sanders wasn't completely healthy at the start of the season. The offense has been just sort of a mess. But maybe this is the start of that. Maybe they are starting to get him the football a little bit more. And so I would tend to agree with you that I think they're going to try to feed him and load him up with touches. I would think that also they have the benefit of the Niners. The Niners still are not completely healthy on both sides of the football. So maybe this game stays within a score for most of the day, which means that Sanders doesn't necessarily get too impacted by game script. But, man, it just gets harder and harder sort of believe in this Eagles offense, in part because Carson Wentz has played badly, in part because they just can't keep people healthy. So we'll see what happens. I'm still riding on the Miles Sanders train. I know I got on it a little bit late, but I'm here. And so don't make me regret this decision, please. That's all I'm asking. Speaking of trains, I was driving the Kenyon Drake train all offseason, just shoveling coal into that engine like crazy. It has moved a lot slower than I thought it would. But this week, he's got the Carolina Panthers. He's been tweeting to people about how he's going to step it up, about how, you know, fantasy managers basically shouldn't give up on him. But Florio, if it doesn't happen against the Panthers, what do we do then?
I think then we start to really worry. Marcus, you were driving that train, but I was on it with you as well. I liked Kenyon Drake coming into the year. And if I told people who drafted Kenyon Drake in the first round, hey, this guy's going to have 18 touches in each of the first 3 weeks, you think you'd feel pretty good heading into week 4, but he's getting the touches. It just the targets are going to Chase Edmonds right now, and Kyler Murray is vulturing all of those touchdowns away from him. So to me, if that happens this week, then you really got to be fearful, because the biggest weakness for the Panthers is against the run, especially allowing touchdowns to running backs. They allowed by far the most in 2019. They've already allowed 7 through 3 weeks this year. And with DeAndre Hopkins looking like he could legitimately be in question this week, I'm expecting them to rely more on Kenyon Drake. But if they still go out there and let Kyler Murray run a lot and continue to steal those touchdowns away, and he can't have a good day against this matchup, then I would be really start to worry.
Yeah, I think that this is the week maybe things turn around. I mean, the Panthers are coming up this week. They've got some easier matchups coming over the next few weeks. So I feel like this potentially is the start of something good for Kenyon Drake. There was a reason we all believed in him. The usage rates have been about what we expected them to be. It's just that the production hasn't happened. So maybe, you know, in a basketball parlance, or even at a baseball parlance, you want that easy one, right? You want that easy layup. You want that, you know, that bloop single to fall in, and then you feel better, and then you start performing. So maybe this is sort of that easy layup that for Kenyon Drake, and then he can start to really produce the way we hope that he would. Because if it doesn't happen this week, then I think we start to really get concerned about what his production is going to be throughout the year. We could say the same thing about Joe Mixon. He's getting plenty of touches. His production has not been great. They're using Gio Bernard as sort of the third down pass catching back. They've even used Gio down near the goal line to run for a touchdown. So if it doesn't happen for Joe Mixon this week against the Jaguars, what are we doing with that?
I think you really, like, you have to worry. I'm already having concerns if this guy is really an RB1. I think we, going forward, kind of have to consider moving him down and putting him as an RB2 each week. And And that's where I have him ranked as this week, even though it's a good matchup. Gio Bernard tends to play about 40% of the snaps each week. He's the back that's out there in the two-minute drills and in the passing down scenarios. Like, it was great a couple weeks ago. Joe Mixon had four targets in the first half and then didn't have any other the rest of the game in a game that they were trailing. So it's just Gio Bernard isn't fantasy relevant, but he does – he is in the sense in the way that he hurts Joe Mixon. And this is a good matchup in a game that you hope that the Bengals could be playing with the lead. But if he can't get it done again this week, I think you really need to start to look at Joe Mixon as more of an RB2, especially Marcus, the goal line struggles that he has had this year. Like, I feel like every time they get near the goal line, they give it to Mixon and he just gets stuffed.
The thing that worries me the most about Joe Mixon, or is frustrating, I guess I should say, about Joe Mixon is the usage rates, the number of touches he's getting, makes it hard to just give up on him, right? You're not going to put him out on the waiver wire. But his production means it's hard to start him consistently and expect good things. I mean, you're right. He's maybe an RB2. Maybe he's a flex because the production doesn't warrant him being an RB1. Also, though, you can't really trade him because nobody's going to look at what he's done this year and say, I got to get that guy on my team. You really are sitting there with him as kind of an anchor right now on your roster, and there aren't a lot of easy answers about what to do about Joe Mixon. You just hope that things turn around this week against the Jaguars. Maybe it's a situation similar to last year, because remember last year at the start of the year, Joe Mixon was not great, and we were sort of having these same conversations after the first month or so of the season. And then in the back half of the year, things got better. In the last, you know, 7 or 8 games, Joe Mixon really picked things up and started to look like the RB1. And I think that is a lot of what fed into the belief that he could have a big season this year. So far, through 3 weeks, it hasn't happened. So, through 3 weeks, Ryan Fitzpatrick has kind of been a thing. I mean, last week we talked about whether or not Fitz's game against the Jaguars was delaying the arrival of Tua Tagovailoa. We know that Fitzmagic is going to start this week against the Seahawks. So, if you have, say, Ryan Tannehill, or you have Ben Roethlisberger, and we know they're not playing this week, is it crazy to consider streaming Fitz against that Seahawks defense?
No, I don't think it is at all. In fact, I actually had Fitzpatrick ranked ahead of both of those quarterbacks before we knew that they weren't going to be playing this week. I have Ryan Fitzpatrick as my QB12 this week. I mean, what could possibly go wrong with that? But I do think he is very much so in play this week. Like, he scored 24 or more fantasy points the last 2 weeks, and there's no team allowing anything close to what the Seahawks are allowing right now through the air. They're allowing over 400 passing yards per game on average. Quarterbacks are just going off against them. Every quarterback that's played them has scored at least 23 fantasy points and finished as a QB1. They're the only team in the league this year to allow a QB1 each of the first 3 weeks. So I think right now, like, quarterback, I know you didn't expect to be using Ryan Fitzpatrick in week 4, but I think there is a lot of reason to get excited for him in this game.
I completely agree. This is one of those situations, right, where you look at what's happened the first 3 weeks. You look at the way the Seahawks defense has played, and your brain makes the point to you that it does make sense to play Ryan Fitzpatrick. But your statement of what could go wrong sort of speaks to, I think, how we all feel in our hearts and in our guts. It is akin to me last week tweeting about Minshew and all the Minshew hype and how things are going to go sideways, right? And then they did on TNF. And I think in deep down in all of our souls, while we know that statistically and analytically it makes sense to stream Ryan Fitzpatrick, that, you know, this could easily be the game that he blows up and throws like 5 picks and just completely goes, Fitzmagic is the good guy. We don't have an evil twin version nickname of him. We need to come up with one, but that guy potentially could show up this week. Anyway, that's a long way of me saying you should probably stream Ryan Fitzpatrick this week against the Seahawks because the matchup is great. And especially if you are missing a quarterback or you're struggling at the quarterback position, you could do worse in terms of a streaming option. But, you know, if something goes halfway wrong, you know, we'll all look back and we'll kind of say, yeah, this was certainly in the range of outcomes. But, hey, at least you have a logical reason for why you did what you did. And to me, if you can tell yourself in good faith a story for why you made a move, then it was the right move in your heart, and then on the field, things just didn't work out. And at that point, it's just out of your hands. Speaking of out of our hands, the Cowboys wide receivers have been sort of an interesting roulette wheel this season. We've had Amari Cooper games. CeeDee Lamb has played pretty well throughout the season. Last week, it was a combination of Cedric Wilson and Michael Gallup. So this week, the Cowboys have the Cleveland Browns. When we spin the wheel of Cowboys receivers, where does it land for you?
I'm going to say this with almost zero confidence. I think this week is a good week for Amari Cooper. Like, I have him ranked high. The Browns, the weakness for them has been through the passing game, and they've allowed the sixth most fantasy points per game to wide receivers this year. And it just feels like while the wheel does spin every week between these Cowboys wide receivers, it does feel like Amari Cooper each week is still getting the targets and is still seeing the most consistent volume of that bunch. After him, though, I think it's a CeeDee Lamb week. The Browns' weakness has been through the slot, and we know that was what the Seahawks' weakness has been, too. It didn't really work out for Lamb last week. He still did show his safe floor with 11 fantasy points, but I don't expect Cedric Wilson to steal those two long touchdowns again. At least I'm hopeful. So I think it's a Cooper and Lamb week this week.
I feel like the Cedric Wilson thing, it was a nice flash that no one saw coming, but I don't think it's sustainable simply because he's just not on the field that much. He's not running that many routes. So just the opportunity is less for Wilson. I'm with you on the fact that I think this is a CeeDee Lamb week, mostly because the Browns have struggled so much against slot receivers. That is where Lamb is pretty much doing most of his work. I think it's something like 87% of snaps and about three quarters of his targets have come from the slot this year. So I think that is going to be where he continues to operate and where his opportunities are going to be. So he's the guy that I think is going to happen. I also just have this feeling that they're going to try to get him in the end zone this week, right? We're into week four.
I hope.
CeeDee Lamb has not scored his first NFL touchdown. So I just have this feeling that maybe they really concentrate on trying to get CeeDee Lamb his first NFL touchdown to sort of break the seal there and really get him on the board. So that's why I'm going with Lamb. But I do feel like if you have any one of those three main receivers, whether it's Cooper, Lamb, or Gallup, I think you're in a good place to start them this week against the Browns. Take that for what you will.
I had them all in my top 30.
There you go. So take that for what you will. You know, we'll see what happens when it comes to game time on Sunday, but I think you're in a good position to start any one of those guys. It's time for Best Value, presented by DraftKings. We go through a lineup and try to figure out the guys who could give you the most bang for your DFS buck in week four. Starting at the quarterback position, we talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick as a streaming option, and so it makes plenty of sense, Florio, that is where you decide to go this week.
Yeah, at only 5,400, I think he's a really good value. Like we were talking about earlier, the Seahawks allow the second most fantasy points to quarterbacks, the most passing yards per game to the position. And Ryan Fitzpatrick can potentially pick up some points with his legs. We saw him score a rushing touchdown last week. I think this is a game where he's going to have to throw a lot if they're chasing points, trying to keep up with Russell Wilson in that offense. So I think he has a sky-high upside this week, and I like him a lot as a value.
I'm going to go with Matthew Stafford this week, and I think it's because, look, the Lions haven't really figured out how to run the football effectively. I know Adrian Peterson has been, I think, better than anticipated, but I still don't think they can survive on feeding him the football and letting him do his thing. This is not, you know, this is not 2010, 2011, where he was that dude. The Saints also really struggled against Derek Carr. I mean, they got carved up by the Raiders on Monday night not that long ago. So I think Matthew Stafford has a chance to go out there, spread the ball around, whether it's, you know, Galladay, Jones, TJ Hawkinson, and maybe do some things this week. At running back, we seem to have settled on a Rams running back, at least for the short term, right?
I think so. Like, Darrell Henderson has gone out and put up 120 yards and a touchdown in the last two games, 19 fantasy points or more in both of them. And his price is still only 5,800. I feel like if this was Cam Akers having this kind of success, we'd be talking about him a lot more because that's who everyone was excited about coming into the year. But Henderson is getting the job done. I mean, the Rams are running the ball more than any team in the NFL right now this year. And they're playing the Giants who, I mean, let's just face it, they're having a rough go right now. This could be a game that the Rams are playing with the multiple score lead throughout, which means we could see a lot of Henderson running the ball in that second half. So I think he has a really, really high ceiling this week.
It's funny because this is the Darrell Henderson that everyone was predicting last year. He was the reason that Todd Gurley was getting bumped down draft boards and everybody was sort of talking up Darrell Henderson. And it didn't happen. And so it's like, it's almost because, well, it didn't happen last year. So everybody's like, well, that's it. It's done. You had one chance and it's over. And we've moved on to Cam Akers. But Daryl Henderson is flashing pretty well right now. So I talked about Kenyon Drake. And I'm going to put my fake money where my mouth is and say that this is the week that Kenyon Drake gets it going against the Carolina Panthers. I do feel like, you know, his DraftKings salary down to $6,000, I feel like it kind of got bumped down because we haven't seen much from Kenyon Drake so far this season. So maybe that works to your benefit if you're putting together a lineup. You're going to get a guy that potentially gets a lot of touches against a bad run defense, and it'll allow you to fit some other maybe more higher salary guys elsewhere in your lineup. Again, if it doesn't happen for Kenyon Drake this week, then I think we start to press the panic button, but this is an opportunity maybe to take advantage of a guy at sort of a depressed salary. Over to wide receiver. We talked about you going with Ryan Fitzpatrick, so you're going with a stack here to try to double up, huh?
Yeah, I think I would definitely be trying to get Ryan Fitzpatrick, number one wide receiver, DeVante Parker in my lineup if I'm using Ryan Fitzpatrick this week. I keep talking about how the Seahawks have just been carved up through the air this year. They're allowing over 78 fantasy points per game to the wide receiver position this year. No other team is even allowing 50. So it just shows you how great of a matchup Seattle has been this year for wide receivers. Parker continues to be the top pass catching option for Fitzpatrick and this Dolphins defense. And if you had concerns about his hamstring, I think it is helpful that they played last week on Thursday, so he gets, you know, an extra 3 days to recover.
Yeah, I think I like Parker this week. I like the Preston Williams as a deep sleeper. I think in one lineup I put together, I even went with the double stack of Fitzpatrick with Parker and Mike Gesicki, just because, look, man, the Seahawks secondary, it is no longer the Legion of Boom. It's much more like the Legion of Whom. So I think it's a chance for you to sort of kind of play on that a little bit for what should be a relatively decent salary. At my wide receiver spot, I'm going with a ceiling play here, and that's Brandon Cooks. I know it's been hard to sort of peg the Texans wide receivers through the first couple of weeks. Will Fuller had that big game in the opener against Kansas City. Since then, it has been sort of hard to pinpoint, but we know Brandon Cooks is a guy that will give you a potentially high ceiling on any given week. I know he's been sort of battling through that quad issue, but he has been able to get out on the field and play. The Vikings secondary has been very vulnerable through the first 3 weeks of the season. We have seen teams really have some big games against them through the air. So I'm going to take the chance, especially with the salary that Cooks is drawing this week, to get him in the lineup and see if maybe I can pad in some other places. Over to tight ends. I keep saying it. The Jimmy Graham jokes are done. Like, yeah, at this point, we got to start to buy in. And I'm surprised that the DraftKings salary has not yet caught up for him.
Yeah, after week one, Marcus, remember, we both said he was a mirage, and he's looking very real right now. He leads this team in red zone targets. He has 3 touchdowns through the first 3 weeks already. And last week when Nick Foles came in, he threw to Jimmy Graham more than anyone 7 times. So I know on paper the Colts matchup looks tough against tight ends. They're allowing the second fewest points to the position, but they have played a Jets and Giants offense who aren't really the best right now. So I do think that the matchup may be a little bit more friendly than it looks like on paper. And there's just opportunity there right now with Jimmy Graham.
Yeah, the targets have to go somewhere. And the best part is when Nick Foles came in, the target share didn't diminish. In fact, it might have even gone up with Nick Foles versus Mitch Trubisky. I'm going to go Dalton Schultz as my value tight end this week. And we talked about the Cowboys wide receivers. Look, you can't cover all of them, right? The Browns have to figure out where they're going to focus their attention, whether it is going to be on Cooper or Lamb or Gallup or what have you. So that means that there could be some things open for Dalton Schultz. On top of it, tight ends so far this season have eaten the Browns alive. I mean, I know some of it a couple weeks ago, we talked about the Bengals and having to sort of like fill in after CJ Uzama went down. Some of that was sort of game script related, but Dalton Schultz has shown that he's a part of the game plan there in Dallas, and he could have some opportunities against the Browns this week. Finally, defensively, yeah, I felt like, Florio, there just weren't a lot of great matchups in terms of values or whatever defensively. It seems like we're just sort of trying to make the best of what we have out in front of us this week.
Yeah, I went with the Rams, who I believe are the second most expensive defense on DraftKings this week, but I think they're a good value. The Giants, they're coming into the week. We're second fewest points per game scored this year at just about 13 per game. And then they're in the top three in giveaways per game right now. Plus, I experienced firsthand as a Bills fan the wrath of Aaron Donald last week. Good luck stopping that guy. I think the Rams defense could put up a lot of points this week.
I agree with that as well. I'm going to go with the 49ers. And again, it's a defense that you're probably going to have to pay up for a little bit. And maybe this group isn't quite as fearsome as they would be if they were completely healthy. But this is still a pretty good defense, as we have seen. And we talked earlier about the Eagles still trying to find themselves offensively, still dealing with a ton of injuries, not having a whole lot of depth at wide receiver. So I'm willing to take the shot on the 49ers, especially when you factor in that Carson Wentz has thrown two interceptions in each game he has played this season. The offensive line is struggling to protect him. I'm willing to sort of spend a little bit more here defensively and get a defense I think can put together some play. So there you go. One person's fight is never just one person's fight. It takes all of us to fight cancer. Join the NFL and the American Cancer Society in the fight today by talking to your doctor or reminding a loved one about getting screened. Visit NFL.com/crucialcatch to learn more. It is time for Best of the Pack, presented by Panini Trading Cards. Every week we open a pack of cards. We pick out the three best players we can find in there, and we talk about what we expect from them in week four. So here we go. Digging through this week, and our first one, it is Aaron Rodgers. Now, I will tell you that a couple of days ago, Aaron Rodgers against the Atlanta Falcons, it just seemed like it was going to be unfair, but here we are on Friday. Alan Lazard, we know, is out indefinitely after having core muscle surgery. Davante Adams is still dealing with a hamstring. We're waiting for further word on him. So, I mean, what are we feeling about Aaron Rodgers now, knowing that he's going to go into this potentially down a couple of weapons?
I still have him as my QB8 this week. For me, the quarterback position, the top six guys, you could put them in any order you want, but they are there. And then I have Deshaun Watson ahead of him because I still think Watson, you know, his upside is as high as it comes. But Rodgers, kudos to Aaron Rank. I faded Rodgers heading into the year, and Rank's been calling the Aaron Rodgers revenge tour since before it got started. But that's what this season looks like. Like, Rodgers has a chip on his shoulder and something to prove. This is a fantastic matchup against a Falcons secondary that has allowed the second most passing yards to quarterbacks this year. So I think Rodgers, yeah, it stinks that he may be without his two top weapons. Hopefully Davante Adams plays, but I still think you get him in your lineup.
The Aaron Petty party, as I've been calling it, has been pretty solid this year. Both Aarons, right? I mean, Aaron Rodgers obviously going out and doing big things after people sort of faded him this year. But even Aaron Jones. I mean, there was so much chatter about the Packers going out and drafting A.J. Dillon and all of us saying there's no way Aaron Jones can duplicate what he did last year with the 19 touchdowns. And both those guys have gone out and smashed through the first 3 weeks. So maybe, look, we need, this is where we get the Michael Jordan last dance meme of, and then I took it personally. Like, that I feel like applies to both Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones this year, because they seem to have taken it personally, and fantasy managers are reaping the rewards of that. Speaking of running backs, our next one up, Josh Jacobs, who has had sort of an up and down fantasy season to start the year. This week, a tough matchup against the Buffalo Bills. What is your level of confidence for Jacobs against your beloved Bills?
I have Jacobs a little bit lower than normal because the matchup isn't the best. And also, we saw him last week plagued a little bit by that injury. It hurt his numbers. But I still have him as a top 12 running back because the Raiders right now, their receiving depth is really being tested. And we know the strength of the Bills defense is that secondary. So I think that at least early on, the Raiders are really going to be trying to feed Josh Jacobs the ball a lot. And we know the potential that he has, seeing that many touches. He could break one long. He's always a threat to find the end zone. So I still have him as a top 12 running back this week.
My fear is that game script in the second half maybe turns against him. And I say that based on how the Bills have been scoring points. The fact that they are spreading the field, they're throwing the football so much, and they're really being aggressive early in games. The Raiders secondary can have issues sometimes. If they start giving up big plays, if they start giving up a lot of points, do they go away from Jacobs and do we see more of the passing game? But early on, I do agree that they may try to establish the run. And so hopefully he can get something going early, stay in the game and get his production there. And if the Raiders can keep it close, then I do feel okay about Josh Jacobs over the course of four quarters. All right, our third one is Tampa Bay Buccaneers receiver Mike Evans. And we talked about Evans a little bit earlier in the show. Chris Godwin has been ruled out. Leonard Fournette has been ruled out. We're hoping that we get a little bit more than a Jordan Howard-ish type performance. It's, you know what, Adam Rank and I coined the term 7.1. You had Hayden Hurst last week who got you one catch for 1 yard and one touchdown. In PPR leagues, that's 7.1 points. Mike Evans was kind of a 7.1 guy two times over last week. He's going to be more than that this week, right?
I would hope so. Like, it's been kind of annoying as someone who's been very vocal in the draft season, like fading Mike Evans, because a lot of what I was worried about, like them not, like Brady not being a down the field type thrower anymore, and Evans kind of not seeing the type of volume that he had, especially air yards with Jameis Winston, that's all come to fruition. But these 1 yard touchdowns have kept him fantasy relevant. I'm expecting more this week. I typically have had him in that like wide receiver 10 through 15 range each week, but this week he is a wide receiver one for me with no Chris Godwin.
I'm sort of with you on that. My fear about Mike Evans was that he would get targets, sure, and he would get some catches, but that it wouldn't be a lot of downfield throws. I also felt like he wasn't going to be kind of a red zone goal line target. It has sort of been somewhere in between. He's getting catches. He's not getting a lot of downfield throws, but the throws he's getting seem to be near the goal line. So I don't really know what to make of it. It's good for fantasy. I don't know if it's actually good, but here we are. So I think this week with no Chris Godwin, that it does mean some better things for Mike Evans. Maybe he has a more complete game and he looks like the Mike Evans we have come to know over the first few years of his career. Inspired by ongoing conversations with players, the NFL, NFL Players Association, and Players Coalition together launched NFL Votes to empower and improve our communities through exercising the right to vote. Join the NFL family by registering to vote today and make your voice heard this November. Visit NFL.com/votes to learn more. It is time for this week's edition of Ask a Nerd, and heading into week four, we pose the question to our own Matt Okada about some of the best fantasy performances put together by rookie wide receivers. Take a look.
Thanks, Marcus. Here are the top five fantasy seasons by a rookie wide receiver in the Super Bowl era. Sailing into the number five slot, we have Buccaneers first round pick, Mike Evans. Evans had 12 touchdowns in his debut year, along with the first of six straight 1,000-yard seasons, a streak that is still active, en route to 245.1 fantasy points. Marching into the number four spot is Saints phenom and last year's wide receiver one, Michael Thomas. Thomas had 255.7 fantasy points, thanks primarily to his 92 catches, an early sign of a record-breaking future. Flying up to number three on our list is Anquan Boldin of the Arizona Cardinals. Boldin set and still holds the NFL record for receptions by a rookie, with 101, and in PPR that was good for 282.7 fantasy points. Towering above all but one player, our number two receiver was a giant among giants, Odell Beckham Jr. OBJ crested 1,300 yards and scored 12 TDs to finish with 295 fantasy points as a rookie, and he did it in only 12 games. But our number one player conquered all these names and more, just like he conquered opposing DBs. Hall of Famer Randy Moss scored a rookie record 17 receiving touchdowns for the Vikings in 1998 to finish with 304.7 fantasy points and the top spot on our list. That's it for this week's dose of Ask a Nerd. I'm Matt Okada, and may the fantasy points be with you.
Appreciate it, as always, Matt. You know, I go back to that Randy Moss rookie year, and we talk about, you know, players that get passed over, and the fact that so many teams passed over Randy Moss is still mind-blowing to me. To see the career he had, to see the rookie season he had, but the career in general is just mind-blowing. It is one of those things that I think will always live in NFL draft history. But hey, worked out for the Vikings for a while, so we'll see. Speaking though of rookie wide receivers and what we have seen from the first year pass catchers so far through 3 weeks, what changes, if any, have you made in terms of your rookie wide receiver rankings?
It's really hard to trust a lot of them right now. Like, I would trust CeeDee Lamb still each week. It's looking like you could trust Jerry Jeudy. I'm boosting up Justin Jefferson and T. Higgins. I was targeting them heavy off the waiver wire this week, but they still haven't reached that range of like, all right, I got to get these guys in my lineup each week. I think it's more right now, a week by week kind of based on the matchup. Jerry Jeudy, though, is one that I'm excited about. We see him on the screen right now. He's looking like he's going to be the Broncos' number one target this year, so with Courtland Sutton out. So I'm excited about him. I think he's kind of been a big riser these first couple of weeks.
I before the season, was big on Justin Jefferson just because I felt like he was the guy sort of in the best situation. And, you know, after his big game last week, he is the leading scorer among rookie wide receivers. I should check that because it might be Jerry Jeudy after, his touchdown last night. But Jefferson is certainly in the running for that. It does change, though, because with no Courtland Sutton there in Denver, that means a lot more responsibility falls on Judy's shoulders. So maybe he steps up a little bit. I think the highest ceiling overall probably still belongs to CeeDee Lamb, but he's in a crowded situation, we know, having to share with Cooper, having to share with Gallup. So that sort of caps his a little bit. I'm very interested to see what happens with Brandon Ayuk now that he's healthy and on the field, because I loved what Kyle Shanahan did with him last week. He got him 70 yards receiving, but also used him as a runner three times. I mean, he scored his touchdown sort of on an end-around jet sweep sort of play on a 19-yard run. It is very apparent that Kyle Shanahan has a plan for him. I think there's a reason the Niners traded up to go get Brandon Ayuk, surprising a lot of people. So I don't know that he necessarily is going to be the guy long-term who has the best ceiling, or maybe has even the highest ceiling. But I think he's going to be an interesting piece. And I do think that folks are still sort of sleeping on Brandon Ayuk and not going to get him just yet. I think that's going to change coming up in the next couple of weeks. So something to keep an eye on. We always love to see the first-year guys show out. We certainly saw it in week three. Looking forward to seeing more of it as the season goes along. In the meantime, that is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show presented by DraftKings. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, clothes make the man. Naked people have little or no influence in society. Be safe, take care of yourselves, wear a mask, and we will see you on Monday.